This is the Packer and Durham Podcast, Hour 1.
I'm Mark Packer. That is Wes Durham. Full cast is here and back in Bristol.
Oh, yeah.
Wes, let's get right to it. Kind of a crazy weekend on the hardwood and other stuff, which we'll get into. But a very sad weekend in the world of sports from an iconic person like Kobe Bryant, from an ACC perspective. One of the great guys in the history of this league and really college athletics, the passing of Gene Corrigan.
Yeah, no question. I think Mr. Corrigan spent 91 years in college athletics. I mean, I jokingly say that, obviously not literally, but he did spend, golly, from the time he graduated Loyola High School in Baltimore and went to college, he was in college athletics from that day on. And so it's a sad day for him and his family. And full disclosure, we're friends with the family, been friends with the family for years. Our families have, right? I mean,
I've always kind of thought of the Corrigans as kind of the first family to leave.
That's kind of what
I mean, I don't mean that to be flippant,
you're right.
But you know, given what he's been at, you know, Duke University, the time he spent at Virginia and Notre Dame and the commissioner of the ACC and president of the NCAA.
Service Bureau coach, with Skeeter in the 60s.
Right, sports information director. Yeah. I mean, he saw really every aspect that could be possibly known, from coaching to playing to SID to administrator to the president to the commissioner. And then, you know, the trickle down of his family.
Exactly.
And it's branches into the league in so many different ways. I've always thought the Corrigans of kind of like the first family of the ACC.
That's really well said. And I think you're right. And that's what makes it sad for those of us, I guess, that have been around the league for a long, long time, who knew that Gene Corrigan was, just this unbelievable gift. And the best way I can describe it is he connected with everybody.
Sure did.
And, I mean, we're going to get into some things today. Your dad's going to be here in a couple minutes. We'll tell some stories and let him talk and reflect a little bit about the commissioner and what he did when he came back, but also what he did as athletics director at Virginia.
Mm-hmm. The
foresight of football. I mean, the diplomacy involved in getting Florida State in this league. I mentioned it last night with Dallin Cuff on Nothing But Net. The diplomacy to get Florida State into football for the ACC
easy.
That was not as the biggest layup everybody thinks it is.
Yeah.
There was some real concern about that. And so I think David Teal, our buddy, wrote some interesting things about it. Luke DeCock and Raleigh also wrote some interesting notes about kind of Corrigan's milestones as the commissioner. And then the people that worked with him. The late Tom Mickle, who we lost several years ago, much too soon. Tom was a guy who, you know, he and Corrigan kind of, literally, Tom on a napkin one night mapped out what became the Bowl Alliance and ultimately the BCS.
And really from the same cloth. The mindset, the way you handled people, class, dignity. You didn't scream at people to get stuff done.
Right.
Was a true leader in every sense of the word.
Absolutely.
Let's bring on Billy Packer, who knows a little bit about the Corrigans. And I use that plural in our thoughts and prayers to Lena and the entire family. But Billy, good morning. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
We're good. Gene Corrigan, if I say that name to you, what's the first thing that pops in your head?
Very special person. It's really kind of interesting. My first association with, I call him Coach Corrigan, because he and Bones McKinney were very close. And they had a thing called Camp Wahoo up in Virginia. And this is back in the old days when basically coaches made no money. But they like to assemble together and have a good time. And Camp Wahoo became a place for the Corrigans and the McKinneys and the McCanns and various people to bring all their family and have a basketball camp. I don't know if they made any money, but they had great times together. And, Bones, was a very good judge of people. And at that time, and I think Gene, although he was involved with lacrosse, I think he was maybe an assistant basketball coach at Virginia at the same time. You got to remember, back in those days, like a head basketball coach in the ACC made $8,000 a year. So none of these guys were in the game because they were involved with big incomes. As a matter of fact, I remember my first game at Virginia, and Corrigan and Bones were kidding, and Billy McCann kidding about everything. everything, and we were one of the top teams in the league, and they were down at the bottom, and yet they had this great relationship, and it's really kind of funny, and I always kidded Coach Corrigan about this. We thought we'd just blow them out, and with about a minute to go in the game, we had a one-point lead. Virginia has the ball out of bounds, and they have a kid by the name of Atkins who's a great player, and they call timeout. So George Ritchie and I know the ball is going to go to Atkins, and we're going to double-team him. And we go out on the court, and I've got my man, and George has got Atkins, and we're ready to double-team. And I turn around, and I see a guy who's been put into the game, and he's got an eye patch over his right eye. He'd never been in the game at that point, so I always kidded Corrigan that he's the one that put him in. And the ball went to that guy, and he ended up shooting a left-handed hook shot with a patch on his right eye, and we have got out of there with 1 point. So I think it was good that he didn't stay on in the basketball. But but obviously what he did from that point on rivals anything that happened in intercollegiate athletics in regard to leadership. I put he and Dave Gavitt are the two guys that I respected more than anybody that I've ever met on the management side of intercollegiate sports. Both were brilliant. Both were incredible in meetings, in the fact that they spoke very little. They listened. It always seemed like they agreed to every position. But after years of watching both of those guys in action, they were kind of assembling where the votes were. And they knew how to push it at the last minute in a direction that maybe they wanted from the very beginning. And I think that Dave and Gene were two of the best that I've ever seen at that, and two of the great, in my estimation, legendary characters of what intercollegiate athletics have become from what they were in those early days.
Billy, when you think about Corrigan, and you put it in the perspective of bringing Florida State into the league, and everybody looked at that as a football move. He knew at the time, though, how big a ticket basketball was for the ACC, but you mentioned foresight and vision. He also understood what football's impact was potentially going to be and knew it was important to, once Jim Delaney got Penn State into the Big Ten, he knew the ACC had to make a move, right?
Absolutely. I'll tell you a funny story about an association I had with him when he was at Notre Dame. Jefferson Pilot, Mike Berg, and Ed Hall came to me, and they wanted to find a new product that they could televise. And so I came up with an idea of starting a new basketball conference. And so I went to the Independents, and I had DePaul, Marquette, Dayton, St. Louis, Louisville, Cincinnati, and Memphis, seven schools. And I brought them all together individually, and then we had some meetings in Chicago, and they all said, well, we need Notre Dame. And particularly Dayton wanted Notre Dame in, and I said, no, I want an allegiance from you seven guys. I said, we need to have a pact here. I'll go to see Gene Corrigan at Notre Dame, and I'll invite him to be the eighth team in the conference. I said, I have all the leverage now. If you guys will agree not to play Notre Dame in any non-revenue sports and not in basketball, we'll let them come into the league. And they can do whatever they want in football, because none of you guys to speak of are powers in football. But he'll be forced to come into this league if you guys will agree not to schedule him. So that was the plan. So I go over to South Bend, and here I'm going to meet. By this time, Gene and I had a very good relationship. So I've got him. I've got his back right to the wall. And so I explained to him how we're starting this league. We'd like him to come in, and if you don't come in, you're not going to have teams to schedule in basketball. And he needed those teams in basketball. And I'm really hammering him. And he's sitting there, and he's looking at me, and isn't responding. And I'm figuring he's got to go for this. And finally, he looks at me and said, Billy, he said, I think you've got a very good idea, but at this point in time, I don't think Notre Dame is interested. And so I couldn't believe him. He's got to be crazy. Well, about a week or so later, he leaves Notre Dame, becomes a commissioner at the Atlantic Coast Conference. I thought I was holding all the cards, and he, in his very gentle and very polite way, didn't tell me to get the hell out of the office because he had other plans of what he was doing. If you want Notre Dame, come back and see him in a month or so. But that's just the way he was. He never kind of raised his voice, and yet there was always great strength behind the person.
I will never forget Gene Corrigan sitting courtside.
Bob Knight.
With Bobby Knight leaning over him, about ready to slam his fist on the table and the telephone going crazy. And, you know, Gene, as he typically would be, as you just said, Billy, would just sit there, take everything in.
Yeah.
Wouldn't raise his voice. You would never see mad at anybody. And Knight was going crazy like he could do at any point in time. And, of course, we know how that game ended up going. But Gene Corrigan sat there as businesslike as you possibly could. Again, always respectful of the other person. Always.
Yeah, I had a front row seat to that one because I was broadcasting that game with LSU. And any other person that would – you got to remember, when you were on the NCAA tournament committee in those days, you had incredibly great power. And those were the early days when the committee really started to take the NCAA basketball tournament and turn it from something that generated some money but became a huge windfall for the NCAA to the point now where it represents about 90% of the NCAA's total gross income. But I can remember that. Bobby was having a hard time. LSU, to be quite honest with you, I thought had better personnel. And Bobby didn't like the game, the way the game was refereed. And you know, although he's a good friend of mine, there are times in his life, and that certainly was one of them, when he would go off the deep end. And had it been any other, I think any other committee member other than Gene Corrigan, they would have had him thrown out of the ball game right on the spot. Gene sat there and as if he was just at a Sunday picnic or something like that, and he handled it so well. As a matter of fact, after the game, and as you know, Indiana won, and Bobby, being as he is, at that point, they said, "Well, Bobby, when did you know you turned the game around?" He said, "Well, during a timeout, I looked and I saw that the guy on the other sideline was Dale Brown, and I knew we'd win." So, you know, I mean, he went from absolute rage to being a wise guy, as sometimes he could be. But Gene not only handled the moment unbelievably well, but also the way that was handled thereafter with the press. Just an incredible person.
Billy, when you look at his career, and I think you hit it succinctly, he touched all levels of collegiate athletics in 91 years.
Right.
But the fact that he and Skeeter Francis were kind of the service bureau, the ACC for Jim Weaver, then he goes to Washington and Lee is the AD, and the Washington and Lee athletics director becomes the Virginia athletics director. Think about that. That doesn't happen today. Then goes to Notre Dame and then comes back to the ACC, and all the while has these tentacles in the NCAA and really the shape and imaging of college athletics to what we probably know today in many respects. In fact, I said last night, I think he and Roy Kramer probably, you know, changed the landscape of college football in the early 1990s in many respects too. So just an unbelievable impact for one man in a life spent in collegiate athletics.
You know, if you didn't know him at all and hadn't had a chance to observe him from the inside, you would never. He was not the kind of guy with braggadocio or "I did this" or "I did that." As a matter of fact, I never heard, except from his contemporaries, he never was looking for credits or self praise. But as an example, he was very close to Castleman D. Chesley, okay? And Ches was the guy that basically, he and Eddie Einhorn founded intercollegiate basketball from an income standpoint by generating television revenue. And Gene, you know, I always thought that was a social connection. But Gene was basically, I think, understanding the television industry from that side. And when he became a member of the NCAA tournament committee, and obviously when he became a commissioner of a conference, he understood what television could be. And those thoughts down on the inside of really understanding the future business of intercollegiate athletics, and as you guys talk about football, which I know nothing about, but the need for football to be important to the conference and where it would go, and also the fact that the football schools, and people don't understand this, people always think that football must generate so much for the NCAA. The football generates nothing for the NCAA, because basically guys like Gene understood that the football power schools were never going to give up that bowl income and TV income, forget about a national championship, and give it back to the NCAA. And so that fine-tuning that guys of his ability had is actually what made that work. And all, you know, when you hear about coaches' salaries now being $10 million a year, $8 million a year, every one of those guys ought to drop a penny or so in the bucket for Gene Corrigan and those contemporaries of his that really had the foresight to see where intercollegiate athletics had to go. And one of the great things about that, it enabled the non-revenue sports, particularly women's athletics, to have an opportunity to be so successful, of which he was very supportive of.
Well, I think the fact that he was a coach for lacrosse and soccer, and you mentioned as an assistant for basketball, I mean, there's not many guys, when you go down the resume today, of the real movers and shakers in college athletics that have a background like Gene Corrigan did. And granted, it was a different era, as you mentioned, and so forth. But I thought that all added to his aura of being able to handle not only coaches, SIDs, administrators, not to mention other commissioners around the league
or
around the country.
Or a meeting Billy at his house between Coach Smith and Rick Barnes, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, the thing about it also, and this is experience of a guy that wants to learn. Just think about this. He was an athletic director at Notre Dame, one of the most powerful football operations, particularly even back in those days, more so than today, that has ever been in intercollegiate athletics. He also was at the University of Virginia, where I think they went something like 11 straight years or thereabouts in the ACC, not winning a tournament game. So, you know, he was at both ends of the spectrum. I often think about coaches or assistant coaches that have never been anywhere other than a team that wins all the time. Like, you know, if you're an assistant coach at Alabama and that's the only place you've been, and now you go to another school to become the head coach of XYZ University, you don't understand both ends of the spectrum. Right. I think that his experience at all levels, you talk about Washington Lee, Virginia, the ACC, Notre Dame, he went from top to bottom in regard to resources, availability, potential, and made the best of all sides, no matter what level that he was at. And there's nobody I would think I've been involved with intercollegiate athletics since 1958, so that's a long, long time. I don't think that you can on one hand name guys that were any more important to where we are today than he was.
I don't know how you feel about it, Billy, but my mom reminded me yesterday on the phone that my dad told Gene one time when they were traveling, said, look, man, you can go be the AD at Notre Dame, you can be the commissioner of the ACC and the AD at Virginia, because when you got seven kids at home, you've already seen it all.
Well, you know, I all the things that he accomplished, I think that his love and respect for his wife and his family was his number one accomplishment.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, you're talking about seven children, 19 grandkids, five great-grandkids, and again, I mentioned to Wes, Billy, before he brought you on, that I kind of feel like the Corrigan family is kind of the first family of the ACC.
Yeah.
I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I wouldn't disagree with that at all. Yeah. I've watched him up close and personal for a long time at his highest levels, and he and Dave Gavitt were the two greatest people that I've ever seen in intercollegiate sports, or maybe in my life as a business person. When it came to a meeting to accomplish what needed to be accomplished in the right way, those two guys stand side by side of the two best that I've ever seen.
We appreciate you doing this today. We're doing okay. We're okay. You see the show? Do you? I know this is going to be no. I'd never see the show, right? Because
ask him. 6:12, I think, on my station. But,
okay.
I get the TV to work most of the time.
All right. We're doing okay.
That's a ringing endorsement.
Are we doing okay?
My goal in life was always to raise a person that basically could get out of bed and go to and never went to work. They just went downstairs and goofed around for a while. You know, and what the hell kind of life is that? Get out of the house. Go for a walk. Do something. You get out of bed and walk downstairs and sit around and talk to people.
You know what? One thing I've learned in doing 20 some odd years of radio and now a little television is I can sense jealousy immediately.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what I want to do. I'm sitting here with your mom. I come downstairs and get... that all morning. So you got that pleasure too. You can lock that up, pretend like you got an office down there.
That's it. All right. Goodbye, Billy.
Thanks,
right,
Billy.
See ya.
All right. Take care.
That's the world I live in.
It's awesome.
Like that? Wait till we get him in here.
6:12 on my set.
Yeah, 6:12 on my set.
My set. Well, that's a really usually I get it turned on.
And there's a lot.
That's
for us.
Awesome.
There's a lot for us to get into today.
Oh yeah.
If you obviously want to talk about Gene Corrigan and really the entire family, like I said, awesome. You know, Booze now about a year ago was named as athletic director at
that's
NC
right.
State,
yeah.
And we have a Corrigan tied in with ESPN in a very prominent position.
Yeah, Tim. Yeah.
You know, we have a Corrigan at Notre Dame doing lacrosse, rock and roll.
Yep.
Like I said, to me, it's kind of the first family of the ACC, and
yeah.
This was incredibly sad news and. Obviously, we knew the health issues in the
that's
last
right.
couple of years had been tough. And hey, 91 years is an incredible run.
Yep.
But what a tremendous person. Wonderful yep. person.
Unbelievable. We got some basketball to touch on. We will get to some other stories involving Gene Corrigan. The diplomacy involved in getting Florida State in the league. The meeting at the house between Dean Smith and Rick Barnes, which was unbelievable. Unprecedented, right?
Yeah.
So we'll touch on stuff like that as well. Get your phone calls. Interesting weekend in basketball. Roy Williams gets 880 at Carolina. We're going to touch on that.
We have accounting. We got guests. We got phone calls. It's a busy money, but we do appreciate.
Yep.
Oh, Billy Packer getting up and early with us this morning. At
Billy, it's 6:12. Just you know, hit the button on 6:12. Thanks, Billy.
Oh, Mike Bray, Maui. Mike was upset. Maui,
Mike
this week.
Was hot. Coming up. Packer and Durham on ACC Network, Sirius XM 371.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham, Chester's back, so it's Fuller. Robert, Otto, got everybody taken care of here in the home base of the basement.
That's right.
No visitors coming through the door today, but we do have more guests coming your way, 8:30. White Wilkes, who went off, I mean, went nuts. Comes off the bench and lights up Notre Dame in a crazy game. And
yeah.
Jairus Hamilton of Boston College, the Hamiltons were
he went
going,
crazy too.
The Hamilton boys were taking care of business.
Yep.
As the glob did glob things over the weekend. But we'll get into all of that, Wes, and accounting and all that good stuff. And your phone calls at 844-SAY-ACCN. But another milestone this weekend.
And I've done math.
Oh, that's true.
I've done math.
Get that cold, clammy feeling. No calculator. Wes is over there doing glob math.
Glob math.
But Roy Williams picks up, finally, number 880. We've emphasized this when he tied Dean's record and then breaks it as North Carolina lights up Miami, which we'll get to all this stuff with all the games. But congratulations to Roy Williams on 880.
Absolutely. Yep.
It's probably a bigger relief than anything else.
Well, and I think he said, you know, he was more concerned with getting the ninth win, maybe. But Carolina just needed to... You know, to feel better about themselves. Brandon Robinson played great, 29. Miami plays without Chris Likes and Cam McGusty.
They had six scholarship players.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Not good. And here's the other thing, too. You start thinking about Carolina. If Robinson's going to give them something and Brooks is going to be consistent, Tar Heels might be able to find a little momentum. We'll find out tonight in Raleigh.
Big game tonight.
Big game tonight in Raleigh for really both of them.
Yep.
In a weird way, maybe bigger for NC State.
Totally agree.
But, you know, good for Roy Williams to get to 880. Tar Heels looked impressive, shot it well. Boy, Robinson was really good. And he's had, and for him, I mean, here's a kid in a car accident a couple of weeks ago that now comes back and is able to, kind of shake that off, so to speak. He tried to play at Pittsburgh, didn't go very well, then took the other night off in Blacksburg, didn't even make the trip, comes back and, able to certainly have a career day.
I had a vibe they were going to be okay Saturday. I thought they played well at Virginia Tech.
I did too.
You know, when you're up 12 on the road against a Hokie team feeling good about life, they were in a battle losing double overtime. I had a funny feeling they would bounce back and play well Saturday. They did. I didn't know about Miami's major injuries. Again, six scholarship players. It's hard to beat anybody. I don't care who you
right.
are. And the other one about all this is NC State. Of course, that's the big showdown game tonight. They don't like each other. I don't need to go into that
yep.
in any detail. But I told you last week I was concerned about NC State at Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
That, you know, the Jackets were overdue to win a home game. These are the kind of games for NC State. You want nice things? You got to beat games. You got to win these
yeah.
games, right? I mean, how many times have we talked about this?
Yeah, a lot.
And you see that game, and you kind of go, here we go again. But, boy, it really does put, I think, a lot of pressure on NC State tonight. Yep. C.J. Bryce, you get him back, you're feeling better about the pieces that are coming back. He really just stunk it up Saturday in Atlanta. Normally you get a kid that got that kind of talent, has a bad game. Normally he bounces back with a big night. We'll see what happens tonight with NC State and North Carolina.
Yeah, we'll touch on the Wolfpack and Tar Heels tonight. But let's get to Roy Williams on Saturday after the ball game. And, well, you know, he was asked about 880 and passing his mentor, Dean Smith.
Yeah, you know, but I would have been just as happy if it had happened 4 or 5 games ago. I really did, guys. I know some people don't believe me. I didn't even realize that until Jones Angel told me this summer that we were that close. And I desperately wanted number 9 for this team. And I'm being very honest. You know, when I hopefully I'll live some after I quit, and I'll be able to, somebody will say, yeah, you won some games. And I'll say, yeah, they were a lot of fun. But I really haven't tried to evaluate where I am or anything like that, because that usually means you're ready to quit. And I hope I'm not ready to quit.
Interesting point there.
Coach, you can't quit, man. You got 4 McDonald's All-Americans coming in next year to the rescue.
Yeah.
But now they got to figure out a way to get Cole Anthony back in the lineup at some point in time. I don't know when that'll be.
Right.
But like I said, this game tonight, given NC State what they did Saturday, 48-hour notice. We mentioned this last week. Those Saturday to Monday turnarounds are tough. You got to figure Kevin Keats is steaming after Saturday.
Yeah.
And this is a showdown game. North Carolina's got some momentum, shut the lights out, 94 points on the board, more like it. Man, you know, anytime NC State, North Carolina get together, man, grab your popcorn. It's going to be good.
By the way, the other ball game Saturday that took headlines was the one in Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm.
It took headlines after the game, and we'll get to that in a moment because everybody's starting to see the circulated post game of Mike Bray. Here's where the game shows the fine line, thin line, hairline, if you will, between the top, the middle, and the bottom of the ACC pack. I mean, Florida State has, what, an 18-point lead in the second half?
Cruising. Yep. Life is good.
Popping the break out the whole bit, and they're going down the highway. And then all of a sudden, they start throwing it away. Notre Dame starts banging threes.
Which they can do.
And then things get really, really interesting. The Irish get some really good looks at the end, but when the game is over and it's a one-possession game like that, what ends up happening is it becomes the details of a ball game. And in the case of Mike Bray and the details of the ball game, it became travel calls and a technical. Okay? And so when you get around to the backside of the ball game, it's not about the comeback. It's not about the threes. It becomes the frustration again, and this is what I mean, that fine line, right?
And
that,
and let's be honest, dude, Notre Dame's had so many close losses.
Absolutely.
A ton of them.
Yep. So, Mike Bray, after the ball game, took it next level.
Turner get fouled on that last one? And that steal? Did he get fouled on that? How about the walk on Fluger at half court? Sometimes we're treated by the officials like we haven't brought football as a full member, but yet we get a full share of the ACC network TV. Are you kidding me? He tees up our bench from across the court because he's pissed off at us? I'm frustrated, man. And I tip it to Captain Florida State. They made great plays. I love Leonard. He's a good friend, and they're a great team. You got to be kidding me, man. Come on, man. We're in the league, too. We're in the league too now. Come on.
I especially like the part where we're off the podium still offering a quote going out the door.
He's one of our favorite people.
I love the guy.
Because he speaks what's on his mind.
Right.
I'm sure he's had a phone call or 7 from the Greensboro office after that comment. But I will point out, I do not believe, and I know there's a little tongue-in-cheek there, but I do not believe that ACC basketball officials are concerned with Notre Dame being in the league from a football perspective.
That's it. Yeah.
And I will also point out the infamous ACC index
card. Oh, boy.
This is why we have this thing, right? And again, I'm not going to make a stance one way or the other, but I will just tell you this, in terms of ACC games only, West Durham.
Yes, sir.
Fouls called.
Okay.
That was one of the things Coach was talking about, fouls. Notre Dame has been called for 19 less fouls in their ACC games that they've played, period, which puts them the second best in the league. Number two in the league. Wait. So you cannot.
We now have the index card?
Yeah, it's not the Packer card. It's the infamous ACC index card. Notre Dame's
that's
at a
in
negative,
quotes, isn't it? The infamous ACC index card.
That's what
card.
It is. Yeah. It's always been that. But 20 years ago when we started this thing on radio. Notre Dame's actually pretty good, as you can see. Free throw attempt margin, they've shot 16 more in their games. That's fifth best in the league.
Look at this.
From a foul margin standpoint, in ACC games, they're the second best in the league. So you can't come in there with the, hey, man, you guys are mad we're not in the league in the football. Now, don't go. I love Mike Bray, but you can't go there because, quite frankly, the numbers are pretty good for Notre Dame in this conference.
Speaking of getting phone calls from Greensboro.
So there you go.
Let me tell you where the frustration starts.
Close losses.
Six of them.
Right.
Okay.
Simple.
Mike Bray's last six games have all been 5 points or less, right? 1, 5, 3, 4, 2, and 1, and he is 2 and 4, rather. Well, I was looking at the printed sheet, and I added the other one. 2 and 4 in the last six. I know you love me, Matt. 1, 5, 3, 4, 2, and 1. He won a one-point game at Syracuse. He won a four-point game at Georgia Tech.
Right. Syracuse games were fantastic.
But that's what I mean by this. And eventually, it bubbles over.
Well, it bubbled over
the other night.
Yeah, eventually, it's a call that if could go your way, could be the difference. And instead of losing by one, you win by two or one or whatever the case may be. I get it, man. It drive you crazy if every single game is such a grind, and especially after the great comeback. I mean, you're playing a Florida State team that never loses at home,
right?
Playing with great momentum. They're up 18. They're getting ready to blow you out of the house, and your kids reach down deep and go, nah, we're going to compete. I mean, as a coach, you love that, and you just want to kind of get rewarded a little bit for the effort, right?
Absolutely.
So I understand the frustration, but I do not believe there's a single ACC basketball official that is concerned about Notre Dame being in the conference from a football perspective.
Right.
Just my opinion.
So, by the way, the glob.
Oh, it was a glob special this weekend.
Well, that's what we're going to get to when we come back. First of all, let me remind you, tonight, on ACC Network, when State Carolina ends in Raleigh, over on ESPN tonight, flip it over to ACC Network. You'll get the latest edition of All Access with Carolina basketball. Behind-the-scenes look at the Tar Heel program, unprecedented access to team activities, practice videos, and games with Roy Williams and his team. Tonight, 9 o'clock, the debut of Episode 4 of All Access with Carolina basketball right here on ACC Network. When we come back, Mark, Mike Young eating popcorn, because that's what Mike Young does before a game. The glob gets globbier.
Truth.
I cannot believe we have an infamous ACC index card now graphic.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to get a glob graphic?
You know it's coming.
Glob graphic for Packer and Durham is a necessary thing here. Stay tuned. More coming up on a Monday morning.
Packer and Durham, ACC Network, streaming live on the ESPN app, not to mention SiriusXM Channel 371. Many thanks to the one and only Billy Packer, who kind of led off the show with this regarding the passing of legendary ACC figure Gene Corrigan. We'll take more of your phone calls, too, as you know, 844-SAY-ACCN, the number. Big game tonight with North Carolina and NC State in hoops. We had women's basketball yesterday, which was big. All seven home teams took care of business. But the weekend, we keep talking about the glob. Well, guess what? The reason it's the glob is that nobody can take ownership, Wes.
No globbier.
Virginia Tech, feeling good about life, going to BC, NC State, got momentum, getting healthy, go to Georgia Tech where the Jackets haven't won a home game, Syracuse, team you had, took care of business.
Yeah.
And guess what? Not to give a little hint, but the head of the glob,
Syracuse,
has an orange tint.
Yeah, it should. Five in a row.
They're rocking, man.
Now, let it be said, five in a row have all come against favorable teams in the glob.
I don't care. You're supposed to win games you're supposed to win.
I know what you're saying.
We keep waiting for people to do what you're supposed to do. You want in? Win.
Virginia, BC, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but Virginia was on the road. That was...
That's the one that turned the corner
right,
for
we had Buddy Boeheim on last week, yep. And they should make, what, 20 points in overtime to win that game on the road. Buddy Boeheim making crazy shots, and they have looked back. See you later. They've been good since.
By the way, Buddy Boeheim, Friday night practice, had a chance to visit with him. Really enjoyed the visit, by the way, and said, very nice to be on the show with you and Mr. Packer.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, Mr. Packer hasn't been on the show yet. Mark has. But I didn't want to correct Buddy.
Buddy was good, man.
Very nice young man.
Yep.
We had a fun conversation about growing up with his dad and, you know, being the son of somebody. And I said, come on, you had to have your five favorite Syracuse players, right, growing up. He said, oh, yeah. And I'm not going to spoil the story, but he gave me five great names. And just like you and I growing up, they're not the obvious ones. Your favorite player was never the obvious one, right?
Right, always. Yeah.
Like NC State, your favorite player was?
Oh, mine was David Thompson.
Well, then you're different. Obvious. Yeah, you're obvious.
Really I did like Hawkeye Whitney.
There you go. Charles Hawkeye Whitney.
Kenny Carr.
Kenny Carr. Yep.
That's what you're looking for.
Did you like Kenny Matthews?
Yeah.
Yeah, see? Because he could shoot it.
Mark Moeller.
Mark Moeller. Tim Stoddard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Craig Kuzmall.
There you go.
There you go. See? All right, 844-SAY-ACC, and we'll get to your calls. Now, here's the glob. Right here.
Oh.
I tweeted this out yesterday, and a lot of people are like, why do you have Florida State above Duke?
This doesn't look like the professional graphics we normally use.
No, this is, you know what this is called? Doing this on an airplane is what this is called.
This is a Westerm special.
This is the glob as we know it. Middle of the Mark Packer is what we should call this graphic.
No. The glob's what it is, man.
The glob, okay? The glob starts at 4-6-3 Syracuse. Then you get to the 5-4s and the 4-5s. There's six teams there. Georgia Tech is 4-6. Now, there's a group of twos, Notre Dame, Miami, Wake Forest, and Carolina. In order to be glob eligible,
win more games.
You got to win a couple more games. So, I thought I would craft this little stat. And I did it.
Can I just warn everyone at home to take the sharp objects out of the room? This is West Durham math coming at you right now. Prepare yourself.
So, this is surmised from a conversation. Again, here's a Hall of Fame coach, 900-odd wins, Jim Boeheim, Friday night. Have you guys thought about the fact that the bottom of this league is better than people think? Yeah, Coach, we kind of talked about it. I said, you're actually the second or third guy to bring this up. He goes, people are forgetting how good the bottom has gotten. The bottom of the league is much improved. And he started whittling off teams and things like that that they had played that he thought's much improved. This flies in the face of everything you and I and other people are saying. Okay? So you know what I did? I thought, well, I'm going to take Louisville, Florida State, and Duke, and I'm going to separate them.
Okay? As if they're not in the league.
No, I'm just going to separate. And I'm going to look at how sticky the glob is, 4 through 15, that we've constantly talked about, right?
Mm-hmm.
So after yesterday's games yesterday, the conference record among teams when they play each other in 4 through 15, 43-44. Now, how crazy is that?
That's about as glob as it gets.
Okay. And you know what the home record is?
I do not.
22-22.
Is that right?
It's crazy.
Well, there's a lot of ways you could describe it. I'm not sure crazy is what it is, but it is what it is.
Right.
I mean, come on.
I mean, they're nearly 500 against each other. And you know what that says? Glob.
That is what it is. And that's why every
500
week,
at home, 500. I mean, what are we doing here?
But that's why, Wes, we keep talking about if you're good enough to come up with a 2-0 week, and if you can do that, you're going to pass people. If you can give me back-to-back 2-0 weeks, you're going to fly by people. The perfect example is Jim Boeheim's guys.
Yeah.
They won five straight. They went from, we were having a conversation a couple of weeks ago, where is Syracuse? Remember? Mm-hmm. We were talking about, where did Syracuse go?
Right.
And all of a sudden, a great win on the road at Virginia, in overtime, they go five straight, and I can tell you right now, I've got them number 4 in accounting. Number 4.
It's
now, 2 weeks from now, they could be 12th.
What are we, here's what we're to glean out of this. And I said this a week ago when coming off the Wake Boston College game, our man from Wake Forest, who'd been to every game since 1952 or something, called and said, I can't believe you got Carolina ahead of Wake Forest.
1956.
1956. This is the premise. Tonight, NC State and Carolina play. Okay? Carolina's toward the bottom of the glob. NC State's actually toward the front of the glob.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Upper tier glob. UTG.
And I know this is State Carolina, and I know all the things that tie to State Carolina. Tonight you need to focus on your team. If you're a Carolina fan, don't worry about Markell Johnson, Braxton Beverly. You better hope Brandon Robinson, Garrison Brooks, all those guys play well wearing light blue. NC State, you need to worry that the guys in red and white play good, right? The focus should be on your team, because the best example we've got of moving in the glob is what Syracuse has done.
Right.
And I'll be honest with you, kind of impressed by the Orange Saturday. Now, are they limited in some thing? Sure. And Boeheim has cautioned everybody. Hey, look, we won five. Let's don't get carried away. But I will say this. Buddy Boeheim, Elijah Hughes did not play great Saturday, and they won. Buddy Boeheim, really good. Mark Dolezal, fascinating player. Does so many different things for them, and he's 185 pounds if he's 35 pounds. It's unbelievable. The guy just, he's thin as a rail and ends up everywhere. So, you know, we'll see what happens here, but the glob math is proving globby.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. You've confirmed the glob is what you've done.
Well, because they keep telling me the bottom is better. So I took 4 through 15 and figured out the conference record. And he's right. It's 500. I don't know. And I saw Joe Lenardi's stuff over the weekend. Did you see some of that?
I did not.
You didn't?
I missed out on bracketology.
You're not on the email?
I may be, but I missed out on bracketology. Why don't you update me on that?
Four
ACC teams? Mm-hmm. I think we're going to get five.
I'll be honest with you. Five would be a prime number right now.
I think a handful will eventually get in. But you got to start winning some ball games, man.
Yeah.
Like NC State, Georgia Tech was one of those kind of games.
Yep.
Virginia Tech, BC.
Yep.
You know, those two teams win, Wes.
Yeah.
There really is kind of a separation, to be honest with you. Again, if, the biggest word in sports, just win your games. You know what? I got news for you. The officials are going to make mistakes. Coaches are going to make mistakes. Players are going to make mistakes. No need to whine about the refs. Man, just go win your game.
When we come back, we'll close this first hour. The American sports tragedy yesterday involving the Lakers, Kobe Bryant, impacts everybody, and it certainly impacted players and coaches of the ACC. A lot of that connection comes through USA Basketball. Bryant, his daughter Gianna, 2 of 9 that died in a helicopter crash yesterday just north of Los Angeles. The ACC remembers an American sporting icon when we come back. Packer and Durham continues on a Monday on ACC Network and SiriusXM 371.
There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
We transcended the Lakers in the NBA.
When people talk about, like, the Mamba mentality, that's not just about Kobe. Like, people in China know what that is. People in Japan know what that is. People in Africa know what that is. He became a legend.
It wasn't just about basketball with him. It was about life. And that Mamba mentality wasn't something that was reserved for just basketball players or for just athletes. It was for any human being out there who had a dream.
When you think about the impact he's had on the game, it's not just what he did himself, but it's also for the future generations. He cared, and it all stemmed from his daughter.
To go back to his daughter, which seems so appropriate right now, the way he loved being on the court with them, bragging about them, his daughter played volleyball, Gigi's basketball, and teaching them the game and sharing that part of his love with them. He was someone who loved his kids and loved the world and what was open to him for it.
You know, I think a lot of my friends were hitting me to see if it was fake news. Nobody wanted to believe it. I certainly didn't want to either. I get my heart goes out to Vanessa and the kids. Cole was everything, man. He was what he was. You know, he was a hard worker. He went from being an 18-year-old kid out of high school that was trying to prove himself. He put the work in it, and he personified that every day. He tried to challenge you as a player. If you wanted to be great, can you do it every day? How great do you want to be? Off the court, he was one of those guys that was a mentor. You know, we all went to go work out with him, train with him, wanted to learn from him. You see that in what he's doing now with the Mamba Academy, teaching people how to have that Mamba mentality where you don't take anything for granted. You give it everything you got. You know, people used to look at him crazy because he said he wanted to be better than Michael Jordan. And in my generation, I played 13 years in the NBA. He was the closest player that looked a lot like Michael. You look at his moves, and I remember getting drafted, and Kobe saying, hey, come out to L.A. When you come out to L.A., you're going to train with me. So this is before my first game in the NBA. I get out to L.A., I text Kobe, and he's like, yo, pull up. So we go to Santa Monica High School. We get there, we're playing, you know, 2-on-2, 3-on-3. We start going through some drills. We're out there for about an hour and a half. Then we go over to UCLA with Paul Pierce and Baron Davis, and those guys start playing some pickup. And then after we do that, Kobe starts holding the king of the court, which is just one-on-one from different spots. And he literally didn't get off the court for like 45 minutes, just torching all of us. Kobe was trying to reach everybody to push past what they thought their limits could be. And he sorely missed. One of the best basketball minds, one of the best people.
What was it that you saw in him that was special as a player?
I think just his work ethic, man. I remember hearing stories about he would see a move by somebody he would do, and he would go train the whole summer that same move and come back with it. He had no weaknesses, no flaws. His legacy, his Mamba mentality transcends sports. Kobe was one of those guys that took our game to the next level in multiple facets, challenged each one of us to be greater than what we were, and honored to call him brother.
So, yeah, from the bottom of my heart, thank you. And what can I say? Mamba out.
He's inspired an entire generation. Obviously, his legacy will always, you know, live on. My heart just goes out to his family. You know, it's tough as a dad to try to resonate this and put this in the words. It's so hard to be able to lose not only her husband, but also her daughter. Sending prayers out to them, and obviously, we lost a great one.
Carlos Boozer spent the 2014-15 season at the tail end of his NBA career with the Lakers, but obviously his friendship with Kobe Bryant expanded much beyond that. And the impact, you know, when you lose an American sporting icon too soon, which is what happened yesterday, you see the impact across the brand. And even though he never had a single college dribble at a Lower Marion High School, you saw how it touched everybody yesterday, including people in this league for sure. Absolutely.
You know, in the ACC, Wes,
yep,
we are basketball fans, mm-hmm, right?
Yep.
I mean, football's great. If you got a football team, you can jump on board, great. But this has always been a basketball league. And we've seen the greatest players in the world come to this league.
Yep.
When you think of international, world-renowned basketball players,
right,
this conference is delivered like nobody's business. But I think of big picture here, outside our footprint of the ACC. And if you think about Bird and Magic,
right,
what they took from Indiana State and Michigan State, respectively, and what they did the next level, right, Lakers, Celtics. And then it was just natural for Michael Jordan,
right?
Just kind of a natural progression. And then from Michael, we went to Kobe and Shaq.
Yep.
And now we've gone to LeBron. And the cool thing about what I just did with you right there, with that lineage of basically four decades of incredible worldwide basketball, you knew all of them by a single name.
Right.
And this is true, I think, whether we're talking about musical entertainment, sports, broadcasters, whatever.
Right.
The greatest of the greatest, you just mentioned one word, Tiger. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Right.
Zion, now, right? You know, yeah, who I'm talking about.
Yep.
When you say Kobe, I mean, you know him. I mean, I don't have to go anywhere else,
yeah,
right? I mean, whether you hated the Lakers, loved them, whether you thought he's the greatest, or, you know, you get in those debates all the time, but you cannot deny his basketball genius.
Yep.
And I do mean genius, right? And when you heard the word yesterday, you're like,
exactly.
Away.
You're just kind of sitting there going, what?
Well, exactly. And the fact, I tell you what, my two daughters, who I would tell you are not basketball fans, they don't even keep up with it, both of them texted me yesterday and went, OMG, Kobe died.
Right.
Should tell you everything.
That's it.
Right? Tells me everything about a generation of fans. And I'm telling you, my two daughters aren't even basketball fans, but they knew Kobe. Oh, yeah. You know who Kobe is.
Right.
And so an incredible loss, an unbelievable loss.
Yep, it is. And it's one that touches a lot of different areas and certainly touches this conference because of his connection to USA Basketball. You saw the tweet with Jim Boeheim, who was on Mike Krzyzewski's staff when they won a gold medal a couple different times and things like that.
And ironically drafted by the Hornets here in Charlotte, yeah, is the 13th pick,
yep,
back in the mid-90s. And, of course, the Hornets traded him.
Yep. the deal that Jerry West, and if you haven't seen Jerry West interview, it is
rip your heart out.
It will rip your heart out. And of course, our thoughts and prayers with their family and all those that affected yesterday by just a horrific accident in California. So Kobe Bryant dies at 41, and his daughter Gianna, which is just a, you can only imagine the heartbreak of the family.
And no doubt. And how about the fact that, that Kobe Bryant dies on the same day as Bear Bryant and Frank Howard?
Wow.
How about that? Crazy, right?
All right. We got more to go. Two more hours of Packer and Durham coming up. We'll get into the 8 o'clock hour right after this.